Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly. The following Green Outdoors was recorded before a live studio audience.
Hello again, everyone. We humans take the opportunity at Halloween to disguise ourselves, or to deceive or terrify one another. But in the natural world, plants and animals, including insects of all kinds, have developed an amazing array of defenses, camouflage techniques, and frightening aspects that serve them year-round. Over the past 7 years that I've had the honor to be a co-host of In the Green Outdoors, each October I've had fun discussing bizarre things in the natural world that sort of go along with the Halloween theme of costumes, deception, and scary things. I began my first Halloween program in 2017 with one I called Horticultural Horrors, for which I discussed some of the poisonous plants that one might encounter around our homes, yards, or nearby woodlots. And I also delved briefly into some of the many herbs associated with witches. Next year, we explored plant camouflage. Depending on necessity, many plants are masters of disguises and have evolved unique ways to camouflage themselves to avoid being eaten. In 2019, I presented Haunted Horticulture, where I described plants with various spooky associations, plants such as deadly nightshade, devil's claw, wolf's bane, witch hazel, ghost plant, and carrion plant. There are fungi named witch's butter, destroying angel, and death cap. The entire death camas plant is highly toxic and fatal to both humans and animals. Death camas and its relatives contain potent toxins. Next, instead of plants, we looked into insect masquerades such as walking stick insects, the various moths and many caterpillars and other insects that have evolved to closely resemble the foliage on which they feed or rest. The spicebush swallowtail is a master at mimicry and may resemble bird droppings, snakehead, or a curled-up leaf as larvae. The larvae of a common moth of the eastern U.S., called the beautiful wood nymph, also mimics bird droppings and may be found on buttonbush, grapes, hops, and Virginia creeper. Some mimics, insects in particular, have evolved to look like other predators. Some have evolved bodies that resemble completely different organisms and objects. These insects are true masters of disguise. Another year, I delved into a brief discussion of the possible source of flying potion associated with witches and the toxic nature of the beautiful berries that are born on bittersweet vines, often a part of fall decor. On the topic of traditional Halloween colors, black and orange, I pointed out the various insects that sport these colors as a warning to predators that they taste bad. And then there are parasites and parasitoids, organisms that feed on other species by living in or on them, as opposed simply to devouring them as food. So this year, continuing in the same vein, as it were, I found that the Center for Biological Diversity is seeking the Endangered Species Act protection for a strikingly beautiful animal, the painted woolly bat. Known for their bright orange and black wings, painted woolly bats are collected and killed in their native habitat in South and Southeast Asia and sold as decor globally. Unfortunately, the United States is a major growing market for this trade. Because this species is not bred in captivity and are taken from the wild, their populations obviously are declining. What's Halloween horror without zombies? There exist creatures related to nematodes that are capable of turning crickets into zombies. Ben Hanolt of the University of New Mexico devotes his distinguished career to the study of parasitic horsehair worms. These lay their eggs in crickets or beetles or grasshoppers and turn the victims into zombies. The microscopic larvae of this parasitic hairworm are ingested by grasshoppers and crickets. These larvae then develop inside the host into worms that can be 3 or 4 times longer than the host itself. Worse yet, this parasite is able to influence the host's behavior. The adult worm lives and reproduces in water, So while the parasite does not influence its host to actively seek water over large distances, it does cause its insect host to seek out and jump into any nearby standing water where the grasshopper or cricket likely will drown. The parasite then leaves its host and goes on happily with its own life. Here's another reason to not use night lighting, especially if you have a water garden. Since crickets, for instance, get about 80% of their calories each day from dead insects, any insects that were infected as larvae in your water garden are coming to your light at night, living there briefly, then dying and getting ingested by a cricket. I have come across a number of examples of other zombies in the natural world, so many so that there is not time to go into the rest for today's segment, but they'll be back. I mentioned corpse flower. You may know that corpse flower is also called Titan arum, a plant that is endangered in its native Sumatra. It's one of the smelliest plants on earth when in bloom. The rotten meat stench is meant to attract certain pollinators. It produces the world's largest inflorescence, or flower cluster. It can reach over 9 feet in height, but it may take as long as 10 years between blooms. So it's quite an occasion when one in a botanical garden produces a flower stalk and brings visitors from miles and miles around. There are plants that resemble animals. Parrot flower, a brightly colored, rare, and exotic species of impatiens or balsam from Southeast Asia. Flying duck orchids, found in eastern and southern Australia, have tiny 1/2 to 3/4 inch flowers that those with a little imagination say resemble a duck in flight. The Dracula simian, the monkey orchid, has a flower that does look remarkably like a little monkey staring at you. A rare trailing plant called dolphin succulent is so named because the leaves all along the stalk resemble tiny little dolphins jumping out of the waves. Red butterfly wings is a rare tropical plant from Southeast Asia whose leaves, hence the name, resemble butterflies in flight. Bat flower, native to southern Asian countries, similarly is named for its shape and coloring. Cobra lily, found in Northern California and Oregon, is a carnivorous pitcher plant with lime green traps resembling a cobra about to strike. The white egret flower, another orchid, has incredibly beautiful flowers resembling the frilly wings of a snowy egret in flight. And then there are plants that resemble body parts, most but not all of which are fungi. The names can be quite graphically self-explanatory. The dark gray dead man's fingers, which I've seen several times, thrusting up from the ground. Brain mushroom, that one to me looks like freshly ground hamburger. The off-white brain or skull puffball, which I've just always called a giant puffball, and I've seen them up to a foot in diameter. This is a delicious fungus that normally would be making an appearance this time of year if only we had had sufficient moisture in the ground. And then there are doll's eyes, mandrake, hooker's lips, wood ear fungus, devil's hand, and jelly drops, which may sound pleasant, but this is a fungus that's a gelatinous mess of pinkish purple globs that look like some creature spilled out its intestines. And how about witch's hair, a type of lichen that may be seen hanging from conifer branches in moist forests in the Pacific Northwest? It's related to the dodder, which is common in Ohio, another parasitic plant, which has long, hair-like, bright orange tendrils that twine up and smother nearby plants like a great orange wig. Bleeding tooth mushroom sounds disgusting, and while technically edible, tastes very bitter, and looks rather like a puffball wannabe, a slightly deflated loaf of unbaked bread, but with the surface of a young bleeding tooth fungus covered with globs of bright red sap-like goop that the mushroom exudes when the soil surrounding it is saturated. Due to its appearance, it also has been called an alternate and much more pleasant-sounding name, strawberries and cream. This fungus forms a mutualistic relationship with conifers. Speaking of plants that bleed, bloodroot is a Native American wildflower found growing in open woods, along roadsides in part shade, and in my backyard. The name refers to the fact that many parts, especially the rhizome, bleed a red-orange sap when cut. Of course, no plant has blood cells and thus cannot be said to bleed, but the Socotra dragon tree of the Socotra archipelago in the Arabian Sea, when cut, will exude latex or sap with a reddish color resembling blood. And the sandbox tree, a large tree in the Spurge or Euphorbiaceae family, and which we will learn more about in a moment, also has thick, toxic red sap. It will cause a skin rash on contact and temporary blindness if it gets in one's eyes. Indigenous peoples would dip their darts into this sap and use them for hunting animals and fish, and also in warfare. This delightful tree is native throughout most of tropical America. The red rosin from some bleeding trees is harvested and used as a varnish for violins and in photo engraving. A very special and unique tree found in southern African countries is known as the wild teak or bloodwood tree, and when cut, its sap bleeds a red color created by tannins in the wood. Some plants explode, well, at least their seed pods do when ripe. The showy and fragrant purple flowers of our common wild violets don't produce seeds. Those are formed at the base of the plant from inconspicuous little fertile flowers. Violets, by the way, are the only host species for the fritillary butterfly. While our backyard boasts thousands of wild violet plants that are beautiful in spring, I'm disappointed in that I never have seen a fritillary butterfly in our yard. The seed pods of jewelweed, the plant that is a known remedy for poison ivy rash, are fun to introduce to kids, including grown-up kids, who are unaware that the slightest touch, even a falling raindrop, will cause the half-inch-long green pods to explode. I like to suggest that a person should reach out and lightly grasp a pod between thumb and forefinger as if they were going to pick it, and then the child in me has a good laugh as the victim leaps back in shock at the feel of the pod writhing in their fingers. Ha-ha, that trick is a treat. When ripe, fruits of the squirting cucumber pop off the end of their stems and then forcibly eject their mucilage-covered seeds in an explosive stream and dispersing the seeds. Although native to the Mediterranean region, the plant is grown as a curiosity in many places. Here in Ohio, ripe Virginia jump seed also shoot off the long stems whenever I brush against them in the woods when I'm hiking. But while the seeds of violets are harmless, seeds of the sandbox tree that I mentioned earlier are violent. The sandbox tree is one of the largest trees of tropical America, growing to about 200 feet. The name refers to the deeply grooved pumpkin-shaped fruits it bears, about the size of a softball. Up until the mid-1800s, when sand was the primary tool for blotting fountain pen ink, these small, gourd-like pods made a perfect container for sand and therefore were a standard desk item until they were replaced with blotting paper. Other names for this tree include possumwood, monkey's dinner bell, monkey's pistol, and, perhaps most notably, monkey no climb. That last name refers to the fact that the tree trunks are absolutely covered with a mass of hard, extremely sharp spines. The sandbox tree also is known as the dynamite tree because when ripe, the seed capsules explode with a sound like a gunshot and with enough force to injure nearby persons or animals. Incredibly, sandbox trees still are sometimes grown as boulevard trees, even though besides the exploding seed pods, the leaves, bark, and seeds all are poisonous. Still, Central and South American natives use dried sections of seed pods, the seeds, and tree spikes to make jewelry. The sections of seed pods are comma-shaped and ideal for carving cute little dolphins and porpoises for sale to the tourists. Well, this is Carol Kelly saying, I think that's all the horror from the natural world that we have time for this time. I had fun researching this topic and hope you've enjoyed learning about some of the bizarre surprises that Mother Nature has spread around the world. But I can assure you, she has many more astonishing things to share with those who pay attention as we venture out in the green outdoors. Thank you. I thank you.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.